And now for reading and writing and radio.
Medusa was one of three horrible Gorgon sisters, so gruesome that all living creatures turned to stone at the sight of them. They lived on an island far out at sea, but nobody knew just where. The half-mortal Perseus was ordered by his jealous king to kill Medusa and bring back her head, but this would cause Perseus to perish himself. However, he had the help of the greatest of the gods, his father Zeus, who sent him Athena and Hermes. Athena lent Perseus her shield, polished bright as a mirror, and Hermes lent him his sword, which could cut through the hardest metal, and then pointed the way to the Gorgon's island. He also helped Perseus obtain three magic things: winged sandals, a cap that made him invisible, and a magic bag that would hold whatever was put into it. Wearing the winged sandals, Perseus flew far to the west. When he came to the island of the Gorgons, he did not look down. He looked, instead, into Athena's polished shield and shuddered at the sight he saw mirrored there. The three Gorgon sisters were lying on the shore, fast asleep. Long yellow fangs hung from their grinning mouths. On their heads grew writhing snakes instead of hair, and their necks were covered with scales of bronze. Around them stood the strangest stones. It was easy to see that they had once been men. Looking into the mirroring shield, Perseus swooped down, and with one deft stroke he cut off the Medusa's head. Quickly he threw the head into the magic bag and swung himself into the air. Wailing, the two other Gorgon sisters took to the air on heavy wings in groping pursuit. But they could not find him, for he had put on the magic cap of invisibility.
That ancient account is part of the myth of Perseus and the Gorgons and is retold in the Ingrid and Edgar Dolar's book of Greek myths. But you can be a myth teller too.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Here I am at the Reading and Writing and Radio Jamboree. It's April 9th, 1987, and you listeners from all over are here on Sangamon State's green campus in the golden sunshine, your bright t-shirts and colorful banners and strong energies making everything full of excitement. Oh, there's Snoopy wagging his tail. He's giving out writing information. But look, I see three strange-looking women coming toward me. One is dressed in old-fashioned clothes, another in an old-fashioned nurse's uniform. And most astonishing, one has live snakes growing out all over her head like hair. Oh, I know her. She must be the mythical creature, the terrible Gorgon sister, Medusa. I dare not look at her, or she'll turn me to stone. Yet all those schoolchildren talking to her, they aren't turned to stone. I'll call to her.
Medusa, I do know your name. Would you tell us what you're doing here and why we're not being turned to stone?
Hello. Well, I'm very happy to be here with all these children today. I'm here because I know that a lot of them have gotten the wrong idea of who I am, so I thought I'd come.
Myself included?
Yes, I'm afraid so. First of all, you don't have to worry about being turned into stone.
I've read only the best of the Greek myths.
Well, you don't believe everything you read. My experience has been that if somebody does something mean to me or is cruel to me or to somebody else, that their conscience starts bothering them and they kind of start turning themselves to stone in a way, as a matter of speaking. But a lot of people like to blame someone else for that, and they like to blame me for that. And a lot of people were cruel to me, and so their conscience was bothering them, but they turned themselves to stone. But
that's,
these nice
much
kids,
as in the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale of the, is it the Ice Queen or whatever it's called?
Something like
that. Where the ice gets in their hearts and they freeze.
Well, they do it to themselves, so as long as you're a nice boy or a girl or a nice person, you don't have to worry about looking at Medusa.
Okay. Tell us what these snakes signify. Lots of people are afraid of snakes.
Yes, I know.
And yet these seem like rather gentle fellows.
Well,
these
are my friends.
Fellows and girls.
They're all female snakes. This one is Hypatia. This one is Cleopatra.
And this green one over here?
This one is Boadicea, and then there's Sappho and Matilda, and they all have special names. They're dear friends of mine.
I recognize some of these names from women,
yes.
Women in history. They're, wasn't Boadicea a famous queen?
Yes, she was.
A queen of England who,
yes,
fought off the invaders for a long time?
Yes, very powerful women in the ancient days, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that that you hear all these bad things about me and that I was so wicked and evil and such a monster and whatnot, and I thought it was about time to set the record straight on this, so that's why I'm here today. And what we need to do is we need to go back in our minds to ancient Greece about 10,000 years ago or longer, and before these stories were told. And I was a very powerful woman then, and I was a leader of the people. And but the important thing is that I became a symbol.
This and would be really back into prehistory, but of course myths come from prehistory.
Yes, yes. And what happened before any of these stories were written, there was a special word in Greece, med, M-E-D, and it stood for women's wisdom or female wisdom or feminine wisdom. And so it was a very special word, a sacred word, a respected word. And the snakes were, people weren't as afraid of snakes back then. They just saw them as another creature, like a fox or a rabbit or a bird. And they respected snakes as the symbol of power and especially of healing, because snakes were very beautiful and graceful the way they moved along. They were always touching the Mother Earth. And because they shed their skin every year, the people thought that they must make themselves new every year, and so it was a symbol of healing. And so when they put the word med together with the idea of the snakes, it came up with Medusa. And so back in those days when anyone saw a picture or a statue of a woman's face surrounded by snakes, they knew immediately that this was a reminder that women's minds are full of wisdom and ideas, sort of teeming with ideas, you might
mm-hmm.
say, and that women have power and women know how to heal. I mean, women were all the doctors and the healers back in those days, and some of them did use snakes because the venom was very valuable. Was valuable medicine also.
I think that they have found medicines from snake venom these days.
Yes, that's right.
They've extracted what chemical it is.
That's right. And the word medicine does come from the same word as Medusa. They both start with M-E-D. And if you go into a doctor's office, somewhere in the office, you will probably see a picture or a symbol of a snake coiling itself around a stick, and that is called the caduceus, and so it's the symbol of healing, and most doctors will have that in their office.
I've seen that
mm-hmm.
many
right.
times.
That's right. Well, it's not easy to explain how these bad stories about me got started, because people really loved me back in ancient Greece. So I'm going to tell this in the form of a little story about children. And what happened was, back in ancient Greece, The girls and the women were very happy and proud of themselves. They were smart and intelligent. They were powerful. They could do whatever they wanted to do, and they were good at a lot of things. And they had nothing to stop them from fulfilling their ambitions and doing what they wanted. And unfortunately, there were a few little boys that, for some reason, became jealous of these little girls. And they didn't want the girls to do all these different things. And so they decided that maybe they could scare the girls into not being quite so strong and smart. And so they started making up scary stories about snakes and about Medusa and saying, oh, she's a monster and all this. And these little girls,
like on Saturday morning TV.
Yes, like on Saturday morning TV or in the movies or comic books, they'd make up these stories. And they'd come and they'd try to scare the girls. And the girls, they knew that this wasn't true. And they'd just laugh and they wouldn't pay any attention to it. So the boys had to try something else. And so they would start calling the girls names, or they would start pulling their hair, or they'd catch a snake and then they'd chase the girls with the snake and hope that the girls would run off screaming or something. Or they would hit the girls or actually kick them or trip them and physically harass them. And of course that was very difficult. You can't just laugh that off. It's very difficult to deal with when someone starts treating you like that. And but the girls did the best they could to defend themselves, and they thought this was pretty ridiculous. They couldn't figure out why these boys were acting this way. Well, unfortunately, some of the girls did believe these scary stories about the snakes and about Medusa and that they shouldn't be smart and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And they started acting real dumb and weak and not letting the boys know what they could do. And they grew up and became women who acted the same way. But fortunately, a lot of the girls just didn't pay any attention to the boys and just went their merry way. And they, first of all, they knew about snakes. They knew that you have to be careful about snakes because some of them are dangerous, but that just because something is scary, it doesn't mean that it's evil, and that most snakes are just fine if you leave them alone or if you know how to handle them. And the girls just went about their ways. They were smart, they studied, they learned things, and they took on various jobs, and they did the best they could, and they tried to make the world a better place to live. And whenever they would hear these awful stories about Medusa, they would get together and they would tell each other not to be afraid and remind each other that Medusa really means women's wisdom and women's power and the power of healing and making things better. And their hope and the hope of all girls and women through the ages has been that the boys would stop telling these silly stories, and that boys and girls and men and women could all work together to try to save this world, because our world has a lot of problems. And we need the men and the women and the boys and the girls to put their heads together.
And the good sense and strength of both of the
yes,
sexes.
Yes, absolutely. We need to work together to solve these very difficult problems that face us. So it's a waste of energy to be trying to hurt each other or frighten each other. That's a waste of time. And we need to grow up and work together.
Well, Medusa, that's a very heartfelt speech, and my thoughts are the same. I agree. We need this kind of competition. How did I get that in? We need this kind of cooperation.
Yes.
Between the men and the women of the world.
Well, I hope that when little kids and big kids see Medusa portrayed in this negative way, that they will remember that that's not a true story. That was made up to scare people. And the truth is that both girls and boys and women and men have a lot of wisdom and a lot of power. And the main thing is to put those things together and to try to make the world a better place to live.
This is Jackie Jackson again, and I'm talking in the now. The now being here in WSSR studio at Sangamon State almost a year later, and there won't be time on this program to play the interviews that I had with the other two lost women of history, Alice Paul an early suffragette, and Florence Nightingale, a nurse. I hope to use their stories on a later program. Our Medusa was played by Steve Drucker, and I know that a lot of you listeners talked with her that jamboree day and saw her snake-wreathed costume and her snaky head. So, what are the writing suggestions for today? One could be, dropped my papers here, how stories get changed. You know that game called telephone where you whisper in somebody's ear and then that person whispers in somebody else's ear and it goes around the circle and it comes out completely differently at the end from what you said at the start? Well, that often happens outside of games. So I could ask you, what stories do you know that start out one way and ended differently, or that you know simply aren't true at all? I can tell you a familiar one. Perseus and Medusa the Gorgon are from the Greek myths, the Greek legends, but people from all ages have a way of giving their heroes and their villains mythical qualities. I said on the interview that myths were prehistory, but they're not. There are modern myths. John F. Kennedy is a myth at this point, many things about him. Here's one that you know. You know the story of George Washington and the cherry tree. Well, that's a legend. There is no proof whatsoever that it ever happened. It was made up, probably he made it up, by an author named Weems, Parson Weems, for he was a minister who wrote popular works, and he added the cherry tree story, the whole I cannot tell a lie, I did it with my little hatchet bit, to the fifth edition of his biography of George Washington, which was published long after Washington was dead, and nobody's ever been able to find where that came from, where there's any truth to it. I also know what I hope are legends. My own kids tell me things that I said and did when they were little, and I say, oh, I'd never have been so mean or so dumb, you know, or so insensitive, but they insist, yes, yes, you were, Mom, you did it, you said it, I remember it. And so what can I do about these legends, these myths, however untrue I think them, except to protest? Nobody ever filmed it on video. So it depends who's telling the story. We all speak from our own points of view, and sometimes we even tell falsehoods on purpose. As in the case of Parson Weems, it was to make George Washington seem an even greater hero than he was. Succeeded in making him sort of a little prig, too, I think. So, today you could write about things that you know about that have ended up being told untruthfully. Or you could write on the theme of lost women, which is described in the manual. I dropped that too, so let's find the page. Oops, here we are. I say in the manual, our writing for today could be, who is a woman you know who ought to be remembered? And why hasn't she been? This can be a mother, a grandmother, or another relative, a friend, a neighbor, a teacher. Tell us details about this woman's life and accomplishments, and some anecdotes that'll help us to know her. Interview her, if possible. Or research an astronaut, a scientist, a tennis champion. How about the woman who's won the dog sled race across Alaska? I think twice now. Or find a lost woman in history to report on. The writers of almost everything, until fairly recently, were men, and they largely omitted women. Why these writers were men and why they mostly omitted women, we'll talk about on another program. But for today, let's try to find some lost people of history and tell about them. Notice I do say people, for there are many men who have been omitted too. But today, if we can, let's concentrate our writing on women. So here are our two writing topics again. What stories do you know that came out untruthfully, you know better than the story? Or, who is some woman that you know that ought to be remembered, and why?
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.